for somebody born in a poor country and you're a poor person in a poor country, it's a no-brainer to move to the rich country. Not only are the odds of your income going up greater on average, but no matter where you end up in the rich country, chances are you'll do better.
And we also see this in our analysis in India, where being in the third to fourth consumption deciles in urban areas is almost equal to or better off than the sixth and the seventh decile levels in rural India.
I'm Prakash Langrani, and I work at the IMF's Independent Evaluation Office.
And I'm Sriram Balasubramanian, also at the Independent Evaluation Office of the International Monetary Fund.
And welcome to this podcast produced by the IMF. I'm Bruce Edwards. In this program, the extent to which living standards in India are determined by where people live. Economists have long been studying economic migration between rich and poor countries, but India's large population and significant divergence in per capita incomes between its rich and poor states make it an interesting case study on the implications of economic migration within a fast-growing emerging economy. Prakash Langani and Sriram Balasubramanian's research looks at how consumption levels in India's rural and urban areas may be driving the migration trends within its borders. And so, are there parallels to migration trends in India to what's happening in the rest of the world? And what might India's story tell us about the relationship between inequality and consumption more broadly in the global economy?
Yeah, so I think all around the world, there is a move towards urbanization. You know, people are shifting away from agriculture and rural areas to manufacturing and services. So this is a very broad trend. And what our paper is trying to do is to study what these trends look like in, you know, in a very populous country, namely India. And what we find is that as in other countries, there has been a very strong move away from rural areas towards urban areas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is happening even though the various successive governments in India have actually tried to do a lot to improve the lot of the rural population through various schemes. And, you know, these schemes have been successful. But despite that, what we find is that there is really a quite strong pull of urban areas. And the fact that urban areas have gotten so much richer than rural areas is something that continues to attract India's rural population to the urban areas.
But you also talk about, in your paper, about how inequality it tends to be greater in those urban areas. Would that not discourage people from moving to cities?
What we are finding is that in India, the rural population is moving to urban areas, even though inequality in the urban areas is greater. And that's because the average incomes between rural and urban areas are moving fairly far apart. And the urban area is much more dynamic. So if you're a person in the rural area, your choice seems to be, well, I can continue to be kind of a big fish in this small and stagnant pond, or I can try my luck in the urban areas where there's a good chance that I will end up being better, because even the poor people in the urban areas are doing better and have greater opportunities. So what we are finding is that this move from rural to urban areas has really played a big role in keeping India dynamic, in giving the vast rural population sort of an escape valve, something to look forward to in terms of how they can increase their opportunities in life.
And so how does this study compare with other research done in the past, you know, on this idea of inequality of opportunity based on location. And I'm thinking here of a well-known study by Branko Milanovic, where he says effort or luck does not play a big role in determining the global distribution of income. Does your paper fall in line with that thinking?
Yeah, we were very much motivated by Branko's work. His work was conducted at the level of countries, and he was trying to understand how much of your income was determined by the luck of you being born in a poor country versus a rich country. So we are taking the same approach and applying it to India, which, you know, is very populous, and states within India are as populous as many countries around the world. So we are taking his approach, but applying it within a particular country. And that's where, on the one hand, we confirm his broad finding that it's not, for instance, caste or class that are really the dominant sources of your income. But as we were discussing, the fact of whether or not you were born in a poor rural community versus being born in an urban community really is what determines 20-25% of your income, just this one factor.
Mm. Sharam, what is the actual percentage of India's population that live in cities? And do those people, in fact, have more money to spend than the people in the rural areas?
Thanks, Bruce. According to the World Bank Group data, almost 34% of India's population is in urban cities as of 2019. So to answer your question, yes, folks in urban areas have much higher per capita income than folks in the rural areas. For example, the government of India's own report mentions that the net capita income in terms of net value added is almost twice in urban areas compared to rural areas. So there is a substantial difference, and people seem to have more money to spend than those in rural areas.
Yeah, and in fact, that disparity at the extreme is pretty striking. Your paper talks about how the average income in India's poorest state is only something like 13% of what it is in the richest state.
Right. I think if you compare Bihar, which is one of the poorer states, I mean, it has actually done relative to its own past well in recent times, but still, you know, Bihar is, as you were saying, just about 12-13% of Delhi, the capital. So it's like comparing a lower income country with the rich country. So that's the sense in which we feel that, you know, India is actually a collection of nations. It's by studying India, we are actually learning a lot about how migration helps countries, what are the dynamics of migrations across countries.
And so does that income disparity between the rural and urban areas explain the huge gap in consumption levels between those two locations?
Yes, to an extent. The gap in consumption levels can be attributed to a wide variety of factors in a complex country such as India. In our research, we primarily focus on the role of location in determining living standards in India. And we find that almost a third of living standards is likely to be determined by location alone, as Prakash mentioned earlier. For example, if you take my family's ancestral town called Mannargudi, it is a rural town in southern India, which is one of the largest temples in Asia, the Rajagopal Swami Temple, and compare it with Chennai, which is an urban metropolis and one of the largest cities in India. You'll tend to find that Chennai has a higher consumption and per capita income levels, despite increased inequality. And our sense is, at least from our research, that much of this is, besides other factors like caste and religion, quite a bit of this is determined by the role of location alone.
And you mentioned earlier, Prakash, that, you know, inequality is generally much higher in the urban areas, yet people continue to move there. Has this COVID-19 pandemic reversed that rural to urban trend at all?
I think there was a very strong immediate reversal. So the Indian authorities imposed a very severe lockdown with very little notice and basically essentially forced the rural migrants to return home from the urban area. So that's where you have all these heartrending pictures of these people who had moved to the urban areas kind of trudging back home to their ancestral lands of the kind that Sriram was talking about. I mean, that was really heartrending. So there was this immediate reversal. But, you know, I think what has happened since is displaying the strong forces that we were talking about and which our research highlights, namely that this force of the higher incomes in the urban areas, the more dynamic environment, the chance that you can do a lot better for yourself is so strong that as soon as the government let up a bit, you are seeing that, again, there is a pickup in rural to urban migration. I think Sriram maybe is more up on what has been going on, so perhaps he can add to this.
Yeah, thanks, Prakash. I do agree with your assessment, because what we see now is that once the lockdown has been eased, a lot of the migrant workers have started returning back from the rural areas to urban areas. And this seems to indicate that, you know, the livelihood factor, which is, you know, defined by opportunity and increased living standards, perhaps in urban India, seems to be superseding the lives factor, since the fact of the matter is the pandemic is more severe in the urban areas compared to the rural areas. Mm. So in a unique setting, what we are finding is that people are choosing livelihoods over lives in this case, because they feel that they need to get back and get their livelihoods going. Mm. And we also see this in our analysis at some level, because when you look at one of the charts that we have in the paper, where being in the third to fourth consumption deciles in urban areas is almost equivalent to or better off than the sixth and the seventh decile levels in rural India, which basically means if you're on the lower end of the consumption spectrum in urban areas, you could actually be consuming more than even the mid or higher end of the spectrum in rural India.
Wow.
So this gap seems to be continuing from what we're seeing in the response to the pandemic, especially in the recent few months. Hmm.
So what types of opportunities will people find in urban areas versus the rural areas? And are those opportunities actually accessible for the average migrant worker?
Interestingly, I think the diversity and quantum of opportunities, the dynamism which Prakash referred to, is very much alive in urban India. So that's a big draw besides the proportional increase in income for migrant workers. So these can be seen across major sectors in construction, in manufacturing, skill-based industries, and even the gig economy in many cases. Mm. Because India has a rapidly expanding digital economy, and the opportunities that is offered in urban India is much higher as well with regard to the digital economy. In rural areas, opportunities are largely centered still around agriculture, which doesn't yield sustainable incomes yet. The opportunities are accessible in general to the average migrant worker, but it's largely dependent on their skill sets and the availability / cost of labor, which they're offering.
So having done the research, do you believe a person's standard of living is actually predetermined by where they live? And what do you think can be done to help more people improve their quality of life?
I think that, I mean, we should stress that, you know, the last 40 years have been very good years for India relative to its past. Average incomes have gone up. The number of people living in absolute poverty have gone down. And I think some amount of increase in inequality is inevitable as your opening up the economy and trying to create a more dynamic environment. So we don't want our paper to be read as, you know, pointing up sort of bad things about India only. I think the Indian story of the last several decades has been a success story. But we are pointing out what we think is needed, namely that at least in the past, this strong migration opportunity for the rural poor into urban areas has been part of what has kept the Indian success story going. And so we are just highlighting this because we want the governments to be thinking ahead over the next 20, 30 years. Will this process continue? Should it be the way India keeps succeeding in the future? Because you can, as you were asking, Bruce, you can imagine a variety of interventions. You could either say that we are going to improve the opportunity in the rural areas, as the present government and the previous one also has been trying to do through various schemes. Yeah. Or you could say, well, we are going to really keep this escape valve of migration going. And if that is the case, then you have to worry about events like the COVID pandemic, which, as we were discussing, suddenly threatened to throw this into reverse. So you can't sort of have that if this is going to be the way India is going to succeed. But you could also have a variety of other interventions in between. You know, India has been trying to basically grow smaller cities, you know, cities that are not quite urban metropolitan centers yet, but smaller scale. And it could be that that offers an option of easier migration. It could be cities that are closer to the rural population.
You know, I can't help but think, like, how many people can these major urban centers actually accommodate? You know, is there, like, what is the level of motivation in trying to bring more opportunities to the rural areas, if not only to increase incomes, but, like, is it a challenge for a country like India to sort of continue to try and accommodate so many people flowing into the urban areas? Does this present a whole other level of problems for the country?
I think that, you know, the bigger urban cities are already in the range of 18, 20 million.
Wow.
Which actually is the subject of my next paper, Bruce, which I can... you know, a lot of cities around the globe have ended up at a population of 18, 20 million, but the difference is that some are rich and some are poor. So I think, to get closer to your question, I think there is congestion and lots of bottlenecks that are going to emerge in the cities that are at 18, 20 million. And that's why I think the strategy of moving down to the next tier of cities, trying to focus the growth there, to me at least makes sense, because it, first of all, it'll be closer for a lot of rural people if there are other cities that are smaller and closer to them. What I don't know much about India, having left 40 years ago, is, you know, to what extent are what people call agglomeration economies really important? Namely, is it really that you need people clustered in one big place for them to have a dynamic setting, to have exchange of information, to have enough jobs that people will be attracted there? Or could you have these clusters elsewhere and have them just as successful? I don't know. Sriram is closer to the ground in that sense. He may have some views.
Yes, Bruce. I think one of the very interesting things that you see in terms of urbanization in the Western world and in Asian cities, especially in India, is that in the Western world, you have a downtown, you have a suburban area, you have a rural area. But in cities in India, for example, everyone is, the residential as well as the professional work area are all in one place. So the urban areas are more often than not highly dense, and they have been flooded with so many people and the density is so high that much of these urban areas have actually expanded all the way till the suburban areas. So if you take a modern city like Mumbai or Chennai, now the geography is far more, you know, outward into the suburban slash even in some cases rural areas, because the city can't take on so many people with unplanned infrastructure around.
Yeah.
So what this does is, I think what Prakash meant in terms of tier two, tier three cities being developed, and you know, India had the Smart Cities campaign, for example, in this government, which tried to initiate a host of tier two and tier three cities to be expanded, and getting airports and getting access to these cities, so that, you know, you have pockets of rural and urban interface, not just in one mega urban area. But I think in the longer run, you need to spread the opportunity more and expand these towns, because in the context of the pandemic, what you're seeing is that almost 90% of the cases are all in the major cities in India, because purely of the density. So what people are finding is that going to rural areas now is a health incentive, especially for folks who can work from home. And because of digital India, you know, you're having 3G and 4G connections even in my ancestral town. So if you have a laptop and you can work on the laptop and you have a good internet connection, and you perhaps have a house somewhere in rural areas, some people prefer to just go there because, you know, they're away from the pandemic. So I think the Indian demographic and the economic changes, along with the rapid digitalization, are opening up a lot of opportunities to spread the living standards or even opportunities for folks, even in suburban and rural areas.
Prakash Laungani and Sriram Balasubramanian, thanks so much for taking the time to talk about your research.
Thanks, Bruce, for giving us the chance.
Thanks, Bruce.
Prakash Laungani is Assistant Director and Sriram Balasubramanian, a Senior Research Officer, both at the IMF's Independent Evaluation Office. They are also co-authors, along with University of Boston's Rishabh Kumar, of a new study on inequality and the role of location in determining living standards in India. Look for it at imf.org. And take a listen to our other podcasts on Spotify or Google Play or whatever platform you use to listen. Search for IMF Podcasts and subscribe if you like what you're hearing. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.